This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura and A Different Nature present the film Theremin, An Electronic Odyssey for this month's KBOO Night at the Clinton Street Theater. The documentary tells the story of Leon Theremin, his invention of the only instrument you play without touching it, and its use in Hollywood films and rock music. The film will be showing 7 p.m. Thursday night, July 11th, at the Clinton Street Theater, corner of Southeast 26th and Clinton, and all proceeds will benefit
KBOO Portland.
On Thursday, July 18th, from 5:30 to 7 p.m., KBOO will be broadcasting the first town hall meeting called by the nonprofit group Article 5 Convention for Our Children's Future on the issue of the national defense budget. Experts on the panel include Dr. Robert Pollan, Dr. Miriam Pemberton, and Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson. Once again, you can tune in on Thursday, July 18th, from 5:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
The first annual Jim Pepper Native Arts Festival will take place Wednesday, August 7th and Saturday, August 10th at Park Rose High School Performing Arts Center, 12003 Northeast Shaver Street, Portland. Jim Pepper was born in Salem, Oregon and lived in the Portland area for many years. A jazz saxophone composer and singer of Native American ancestry, he became a pioneer of fusion jazz in the late 1960s. This event is sponsored by KBOO Community Radio and the Oregon Cultural Heritage Commission. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Coming up right now, Wisdom of the Elders, followed up by Hard Knock Radio, coming up at 7 p.m.
Circles. In our ancient traditions, nature is a circle, and all things strive for the harmony of roundness. In the old days, all power came from the sacred hoop of our nation. So long as the hoop was unbroken, the people flourished. Welcome to Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Arlie Neskai of the Dene Nation. In the next hour, we'll meet several members of the Monacan Nation. They are rebuilding their culture and remembering their history, which includes a prophetic meeting with Captain John Smith. We'll also hear from herbalist Judy Bluehorse Skelton. Nico Wynn acquaints us with the round dance, and we'll continue the musical journey with Paiute song carrier Judy Trejo.
Chubby little babies are round, and we age through roundness. The cycles of life is done with rhythm and a roundness to it.
And we'll hear the story of Grandma Sophie about the Alaskan Dene way of life, coming up on this chapter of Wisdom of the Elders. You're listening to Chester Knight and Wynn, doing Sail on Silver Moon from the album Freedom on the Warrior label.
Sorrows of my life.
Neskai. You're listening to Wisdom of the Elders. Along the banks of the James River lies the history of the Monacan Nation. Only recently, the state of Virginia granted the Monacan official native status, and now the tribe is actively pursuing federal recognition. For the past 5 years, members of the Monacan Nation have aggressively set out to map the history of their ancestors. The background of the Monacan is characterized by enriching family ties and legends that keep the past alive. Wisdom of the Elders talked with four Monacan elders one afternoon inside their community hall in Charlottesville, Virginia. Barbara Roberts shares their stories.
In the rolling hills of Virginia, in the foothills of Bear Mountain, Chief Kenneth Branham remembers growing up in apple orchards. First, the beauty of the springtime blossoms, and then the fragrance of ripe, ready apples waiting to be picked. But the chief says his strongest memories come from the elders themselves, as he listened and learned in the orchards.
I always enjoyed listening to the older people talk about the way they grew up, and some of the good things they would do, they always said it was hard times, but yet they would always refer to them as the good old days.
Those tales of tough times and the good old days taught Chief Branham about his heritage and of how the Monacan Nation began.
The legend goes that the Sioux and Speakers, which we are part of, originated in the Carolinas. Some scholars say that's where we started and migrated up the East Coast, got up to around New York. There was a large group of Ojibwe Indians living there at that time. A lot of conflict between the two groups of people. So the Sioux and Speakers decided they would move west. When they got over to the Ohio area, a bunch of them split away from the main group, came back down through the Ohio Valley into what is now the Piedmont area of Virginia. And out of this group became the Monacan Nation, which at our peak reached an estimated population of 25,000.
The Monacan people settled along the James River in what is now Lynchburg, Virginia. Their ancestors inhabited the region for 10,000 years. They built dome-shaped homes made of bark and reed mats. The lifestyle was mainly agricultural. They grew beans, corn, and squash. The Three Sisters crops is what they call them. They hunted deer, elk, and buffalo. And if you stood in a clearing on the banks of the James River, you'd see the Blue Ridge Mountains in the background with their round blue silhouette. In the morning, the mist rises up around the mountains. The Monacans say that's the spirit of their ancestors rising. This is the setting that attracted the Monacan, the setting that attracted others to this region when in the 1600s came the European settlers.
One of the stories that first came out was the encounter that occurred in 1608 when Captain John Smith and his men brought a dugout canoe up the river and were looking for Monacan territory. They had heard that there might be gold out there.
Monacan historian Karen Wood works for the Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian.
So they were very interested in meeting our people, but when our people met them, it was with a volley of arrows because they were shooting at them. And Captain John Smith found a Monacan man who had been left behind. He was wounded in the skirmish. Our people disappeared after they shot the arrows at the white people. And then Captain John Smith went up to this man and said, "Why have you come to us in anger? Because we came to you in love." And this man told them that his name was Amarolek, and the reason that they had shot the arrows was because there was a prophecy in Monacan legend that said the white people would come, and they were coming from under the world to take the Indians' people's world away from them. We felt that that was a pretty prophetic statement, considering what happened to our folks later on.
By the year 1740s, early 1750s, we had been decimated by diseases that were brought in by the Europeans, mainly smallpox. We would have been reduced from 25,000 to probably less than 500. scattered out through the Piedmont. The group that lived here in this area moved back into the mountains of Amos County, and that's where our headquarters is located today.
The Monacan have even started a movement to buy back the land on Bear Mountain. So far, they own 184 acres out of a total of 2,400, which is their ultimate goal. Karen Wood also serves as program director for the Monacan Nation. She's charged with researching Monacan history so that future descendants will have an official record of events that shaped their history. She describes this task as an honor and a challenge.
It's a little bit more difficult to piece together the history of our people during the 1800s, particularly during the Civil War era, because there was so much going on in Virginia at the time. A lot of the courthouses were burned, records were destroyed.
So were the people and their culture. Racism against the Monacan ate away at the core of this people. But perseverance of the human spirit was no match for the newcomers' oppression. A long-used tactic to keep people in their place was to cut off the education of the children. Tribal elders like Hattie Hamilton remember what that was like.
I was born and raised here at Bear Mountain. I belonged to St. Paul's Episcopal Church. I went to the eighth grade, which was all we were allowed to go. At that time, we wasn't allowed to go to high school or anything.
Typical of many disenfranchised peoples, religion remains a focal point of hope. Chief Branham says the town church has been the center of the Monacan people since 1908. And if the walls of the church had ears, it would have heard many prayers pleading for comfort from the pain of racism.
We didn't know what racism or really prejudice was until we went into the public schools. And of course, that was a big shock to all of us young people that were in the first group that went into the public schools in 1963. I went in as a fourth grader and made friends very quickly. But after a while, some of the kids started pulling away from us, not playing with us. And when asked, they would reply that their moms and dad told them that we weren't the kind of people they should be associating with.
Resilience is critical to the preservation of any culture. But to Branham, it especially characterizes the Monacan people.
My dad would always tell me that I'm no better than anybody else, but nobody else was better than me, that we were all created and made who we were for a reason. I just happened to be Monacan Indian, and it's up to us to find our own path, why we are here, and the purpose that we have in being here on Earth.
But it's also very uplifting to see how much things have changed for us since the 1960s.
Determined not to be excluded from education, Karen Wood believes the Monacan have found their way toward personal, spiritual, and educational achievement.
You know, this is only 40 years in my own lifetime that people have been getting master's degrees, nursing degrees. We have a doctor, we have a colonel, and we're very proud of that because we feel like, you know, in the span of only a couple of generations, we have lifted ourselves from a position of not being able to read and therefore powerless into a new age for our people where we are able to articulate what our problems are and work towards them.
For any culture, it's important to be able to articulate and chronicle the history. This has been a daunting challenge for historical researcher Wood, who says recent tasks of recording and preserving Monacan history has met success.
I feel really good about what we've been able to do in the last 5 years as a people to reconstruct, and we are reconstructing our sense of ourselves. We have a very good idea about how we lived before European contact and what has happened to us since. And we still have a lot of our pieces intact in terms of culture. And we have a lot of work to do with our language, reconstructing a sense of story, I guess. But we feel like most of the really important pieces are there, the values are there, and that is essential. That's, you know, we feel what makes you Indian is your connection to the land, your connection to the people who came before you, your understanding of your own responsibility to the people and creatures who come after you.
The history of one people, the Monacan, offered to the world as one component in the collective history of all people. For Wisdom of the Elders, I'm Barbara Roberts.
Today's Elder Wisdom segment featured the Monacan Nation. It was upon Monacan ancestral land where Thomas Jefferson established his home, Monticello, just outside Charlottesville, Virginia. Monticello was the site of the 2003 Lewis and Clark Bicentennial Kickoff. As the National Park Service unfolds this commemoration, listen for a special series of Wisdom of the Elders featuring stories focusing upon the culture and history of Native nations along the expedition route. I'm Arlie Nesky. You're listening to Wisdom of the Elders. Joanne Shenandoah is a singer, performer, and composer who is one of America's best-known and loved Native American recording artists. She is a member of the Oneida Wolf Clan of the Iroquois Confederacy in upstate New York. Joanne describes this round dance as a dance of unity that moves in a graceful rotation with the earth. Here is Joanne Shenandoah with Lawrence Laughing, singing her composition, Unity. Stay with us. You're listening to Wisdom of the Elders.
Underneath a blue sky.
I'm Marley Nesky. You're listening to Wisdom of the Elders. Life is interwoven with the circular rhythms of nature for the plant people as for all of us. For herbalist and educator Judy Bluehorse Skelton, it's not only which plants you choose, but when. Today, Judy focuses on the season of renewal and gets down to a little spring cleaning.
Living life following the seasons is one of the first steps to creating good health, to creating well-being, not only for yourself, but for your family and the entire community. Spring comes, we're inspired to spend more time outdoors. We're drawn outside to the sunshine. The plants are beginning to awaken. We awaken. And it's the time when our dreams start to give birth to our dreams. Spring is the time of birth. Regeneration, enlightenment, new beginnings. The time of day is dawn, sunrise. Spring is the time when we awake from the winter to manifest the dreams that we had during the winter time. The direction is the east. We face the east when we rise, feel the sun touch our forehead, touch our chest, purifying, awakening us to a new day, to the gifts we're going to share that day. Spring, shoots coming up from the earth, the plants coming alive, awakening. As we move into spring, we start to get our longer days. That's also a good time to lighten the diet. Traditionally, we would do some detoxification, purification with the diet. There are herbs that can be taken to help this process. There's a whole family of herbs called purgatives, which help to purge anything from parasites or toxins or heavy foods out of our system and prepare us for the lighter days, the more activity of coming into spring and then summer. The plant world is springing up everywhere. Fresh shoots or coming up out of the ground, sprouting. These fresh greens, many of them can be used to help detox. I like to use cleavers. The Latin name is Galium, and cleavers are another one of those weeds that my neighbors, when they look at my garden, ask, "Are you going to leave that there?" I usually pull that out right away. And I go, "Oh, no, yeah, I'm going to leave that there." And it's interesting, over the years, as they've come to understand it's a great spring tonic, they're leaving theirs in their gardens too. And they're not using pesticides either. They're cultivating these wonderful little gifts of spring that help move the lymph system, clean the lymph. Unlike the blood, which is circulating around quite rapidly, the lymph is moving very slowly. And so it needs help to clear itself and to clean toxins out. And cleavers are specific for this. So I like to take cleavers fresh. Of course, you're going to have to find someone to show you how to identify them. And I like to put them in the blender with huckleberries or blueberries or any berries that I've got frozen from last summer. And I add a little cherry juice or apple juice and make spring detox. And it's a great little beverage you can fix. I'll drink it for a week or two in this early spring. What I have suggested to people who are just too busy is you can gather your fresh cleavers and you can put them in the blender with a little water, make a slurry, and then pour them into ice cube trays and freeze them. Cleavers is one of the herbs that, when it's dried, loses a lot of its medicinal properties. And so it's one I like to use fresh. And so the plants follow this cycle. In gathering plants, you can follow the medicine of the plants with the seasons. Early spring, the energy is in the shoots, the greens. So if you're gathering, that's where the medicine will be. That's where the energy's moving. Flowers in the summer and in the fall. Some seeds, the fruits, as they come into full bearing, is the time to gather them. When the energy starts to move back into the root, if you're gathering energy or medicine, if you're gathering plants for root medicine, you might be digging roots in late fall, or some do that in early spring, depending on the plant, depending on the person, depending on the land where you are. The plants will let you know. The medicine moves through the plant as it moves through the seasons. Root medicine in the winter, fresh greens, leaves in the spring, flowers in the summer, fruits and seeds, nuts in the fall. And so all things follow this cycle, this rhythm, this circle. With each breath, with each step, in every moment. May you all be well, eat well, be joyful, and create beauty wherever you go. Osadadu.
Educator and herbalist Judy Bluehorse-Skelton practices and teaches her craft in order that our relationship to the plant people will carry through the generations. The circle of creation is reflected in our culture, our beliefs, our stories, and of course, our music. The round dances, as they are sometimes known, relate directly to this view of the world and the spirit. Our music director, Nico Wind, has spent some time listening to and learning about round dances.
Black Elk said that everything the power of the world does is done in a circle. The round dance relates directly to this view of the world and the spirit. Some form of the round dance, also sometimes called the friendship dance, the peace dance, the Mother Earth dance, or the circle dance, is universal among today's Native American tribes. Because the circle is connected to the earth and the female spirit, the round dance form is also used for the woman's dance, honoring older women. Southern tribes have war mother songs performed in a heartbeat rhythm that invite only mothers who have lost sons in combat into the dance circle.
Bone.
The Taos tribe is known for cherishing their round dance singing. Every year, they journey to their blue lake, high in the mountains, where, in the evening, they perform round dances. There, the people sing the joyous songs of renewal. Tribe performs the round dance in its own style. New songs are created based on traditional models or forms for round dance tunes. The round dance form typically begins with the lead singer starting the song, usually in melodic syllables known as vocables. The main body of the song, the chorus, is sung through and repeated by the entire group until a special drum cue that comes just before the final chorus, indicating the ending of the song. Drumming in the round dance resembles the heartbeat. At most intertribal powwows, there are two styles of Native American music known as Southern style and Northern style. The Southern style of drumming has a smooth, even rhythm. The northern style of drumming tends to be faster, and you can hear a lag between the beats.
Think of you, I want to marry you, be with you, live my life with you. Eagle woman, let me be your eagle man.
The Canadian round dance, a very popular event that has recently been adopted here in the States, is separate from a traditional powwow because only round dances are performed throughout the entire gathering. Singing groups are invited to come to this round dance. Each group is expected to sing four songs consisting of both Native American languages and English. Round dances are social dances at a powwow, and everyone there is invited to participate, whether in powwow dance dress or not. Ladies' choice at a traditional powwow is a common occurrence. If asked, a man is obligated to dance or he must pay a fine. Dancers move in a sunwise direction in a circle around the drum. In a basic step moving sideways, dancers tap the ball of one foot on one beat and place it down flatly with the next, repeating the action on the opposite foot without missing a beat. Everyone dances. In a gesture of friendship and unity, the end of the round dance circle will turn back in and the people can shake hands and greet everyone who is dancing, reaffirming the circle of life.
Tribal Rhythms is produced by our music director, Nico Wynn, and writer, Anne Morin. Coming up, we'll hear the story of Grandma Sophie and the Alaskan Dene way of life. And Judy Trejo shares women's work songs and children's lullabies.
Some of these lullabies are my favorites. Some I have created for certain babies that I really love. And others are age-old, timeless lullabies. There are no telling how old some of these songs are.
Stay with us. I'm Arlie Nesky, and you're listening to Wisdom of the Elders.
As First Peoples, we are humbled by the wisdom of our elders and the deep connection they share with Great Spirit, the world of nature, and family. Wisdom of the Elders is produced in Portland, Oregon, with funding provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Lewis and Clark National Historic Trail National Park Service.
Thank you.
As elemental as earth, wind, water, and fire, rhythm is basic to human existence. As a Paiute song carrier, Judy Trejo has an intimate relationship with rhythm, from the rhythm of the seasons change to the rhythms of the lullaby. To Hubivu Chowdy, Great Grandmother's World by Judy Trejo.
I'd like to tell you about the Paiute and Shoshone women's work songs. They also doubled as lullabies. And our people, the women of our people, would go about their duties with a cradle board strapped on their back with a baby in it. And everything that they did was done with rhythm, whether they be scraping deer hides, antelope hides, or if they were kneeling on the ground and grinding meal from dried roots that we would gather or different types of seeds. We had the wild rice and we had the mustard seed. Our staple foods were usually ground and often preserved that way. But the way they moved with a baby upon their back was always done with rhythm. And rhythm was a part of our life. In fact, it still is. The seasons, the elements in which we live in, is all about rhythm. A woman has a lot of rhythm. Motherhood is all about rhythm. And a lot of it is also about circles. The world upon which we live is circular. And the world has the rhythms. It's why we have day and night. Everything is synchronized. And whether we know it or not, the elements have their own rhythm, especially the wind, because we can hear this. And they say even birds have their rhythm and the circular formation because their nests are round. And some of our old people will laugh and say, well, Paiute women are round. It's not bad to be round. Chubby little babies are round. And we age through roundness. The cycles of life is done with rhythm and a roundness to it. But back to the singing rhythm. As the women went about their work, they had a rhythm, and their work songs also doubled as lullabies. And it also nowadays serve as women's gambling songs. But I choose to call them women's work songs. I choose to call them lullabies. Some of these lullabies are my favorites. Some I have created for certain babies that I really love. And others are age-old, timeless lullabies. There's no telling how old some of these songs are. But I'd like to start with one that comes from the Owens Valley country. This is your southern Owens Valley Paiute and the Timbosha Shoshone country. And it goes like this. You, you, who you, one, one, I, you, you, who you, one, one, I, one, one, I, one, one, I, he, one, I, one, one, I, you, you, who you, one, one, I, you, you, who you, one, one, I, one, one, I, one, one, I, he, one, one, I, one, one, I. How'd you like to fall asleep to that and get rock-a-bied by the wind when mommy hung you in a tree in your cradle board? Another one I'd like to run by you goes like this. Hiniko we o henmeno hinia. Hiniko we o henmeno hinia. I would like to explain a little bit about this song. It was taught to me by a man that was like 85 years old. He was a Pomo Indian from Clear Lake, California. And it was one of their gambling songs. And I said, I really like that. It sounds like our women's lullabies. He said, our women used it for work. Now we use it for a stick game song. And he said, everywhere you go when you play stick game, use this song. Keep it alive. And I have done my best to keep this Pomo song
alive. About 2 years after this man taught me this song, he passed on. Hiniko wio henomeno hinia. Hiniko wio henomeno hinia. Hiniko wio henomeno hinia. Hiniko wio henomeno hinia. This is Eli's song. It's a lullaby I did for one of my grandsons. His name is Eli Bravehawk. Someday, Eli, you may hear this. Yahe, yahe, zoe, yane, zom, zoe, yane, zom, zoe, yane, one nigh, zoe, yane. Yahe, yahe, zoe, yane, zom, zoe, yane, zom, zoe, yane. And that's all for this time.
Judy Trejo is a retired teacher with a master's degree in counseling. Her first recording, Circle Dance Songs of the Paiute and Shoshone, received the 1997 AFIN Indie Award for the Best Native American Album. It is available from Canon Records. Though the circle of the seasons seems constant and unvarying, the circle of a people can be disrupted, rearranged, forever changed. We try to comprehend such moments of change through the study of history, culture, politics. But sometimes a clearer picture emerges when we view such changes through the eyes of a single person. Rose Hybear shares memories of her grandma, a granddaughter's story, Grandma Sophie.
The thunderous crack of spring ice resonates from the riverbank. Most of the people are still at hunting camp and miss the raging flood of ice, water, and frozen debris as it twists its way through our small, deserted Dene village. Spring breakup. It's part of the rhythm of life on the eroding, constantly changing banks of this great subarctic river, the Kuskokwim. Our elders come to know their river, their grandmother, as she endlessly weaves her way past our village. They spend their days listening to her, watching her, traveling on her, feeling her many moods and seasons as she flows beneath the Alaska mountain range, hundreds of miles downstream, where she enters the Bering Sea. The villagers have predicted the time of ice breakup for thousands of years, and on this warm, clear day in May, they see that very little riverbank is lost. The ice jams gradually clear, and river camp is set up once again. By early June, we'll be setting out fish traps, smoking fish, gathering roots, berries, and medicines, and fortifying winter dwellings and food caches before a winter that comes too soon. The people settle at river's edge and vigilantly tend fire in the fish houses. They depart and return day after day, fishing, hunting, gathering. They raise their grandchildren to learn of these ways so they can know this power that gives the people life and then swiftly takes it away. Dene women, a storehouse of endurance, gather the wood and keep the fire burning. We carry the water and prepare the meals from the abundance of caribou, moose, wild sheep, fish, spruce hens, Arctic rabbit, ducks, and geese. We fish, even ice fishing in the winter, and maintain the snares and trap lines for small game. We skin the hides of the animals, using all the parts for food, clothing, home, and ceremony. We flesh, stretch, and tan the hides, and sew our family's garments of caribou, with fur on the inside for the winter, and without its fur in the summer. We gather and preserve and prepare the berries for meals and for potlatch. Low-bush cranberry, high-bush cranberry, blueberry, wild raspberry. We gather roots and medicines during their seasons and know how to doctor our families. We feed our ancestor spirits by throwing a portion into the fire, and we say a prayer as the smoke travels skyward. Our Dene ancestors, ancient migrating inhabitants of the subarctic, share this vast tundra wilderness with few outsiders. Our closest neighbors are the grizzlies and dall sheep of the mountains, the migrating caribou and the wolves of the foothills, and the moose, and of course the mosquito nation that live along the forested waters. Another ancient inhabitant, Raven, watches over the people from generation to generation and imparts love, wisdom, and hard lessons. Raven stories are told in the Athabascan language in their correct sequence, without a word or phrase missing or out of place. The elders gather at winter solstice to tell raven stories. Now, inside her Enits sits Raven, in the form of a woman. And she begins to think, that raven. All night long, while it is dark, she does not sleep. She is thinking. Then she goes out. It is dusk, and then it gets pitch dark. There is no sun, nor any moon, so it gets really dark. But she goes anyway. When she's tired of flying, she becomes woman again. When her wings hurt, she becomes woman. Finally, it becomes light, as if the dawn is breaking. Then it becomes like day. And then she sees a big village. As she flies, she sees many people. And then she becomes woman again. She goes near the village. She goes among the people. But they don't notice her. My full-blooded Alaskan Dene grandma, Sophie, migrates to Old McGrath in the early part of this century. She travels by dog sled from her birthplace, Anvik, up on the Yukon River, with her new Dutch husband, William Vanderpool, the territory's constable. They winter travel along the old Iditarod Trail and settle in Old McGrath to raise 9 children, with 50 grandchildren and many more great-grandchildren to follow. Grandma is among 167 natives who fluently speak our dialect of Athabascan. Transcending syllable and sound, Grandma Sophie's redeeming qualities shine through and have a quiet but commanding effect on all the generations following her mukluk steps. She raises her children and grandchildren well, as we learn to share guardianship of these old ways, honor our ancestors, guide and feed our families, respect our neighbors, and enjoy life. I remember how tall Grandma stands at 4'10". I close my eyes, and I am again on the bank of the Kuskokwim. Mom reminds my little brothers to bring Grandma water and firewood before nightfall. How little and weather-humbled is her one-room cabin, nestled at the edge of the riverbank. No electricity, no running water, very little insulation from the Arctic chill. The door opens. Grandma is standing there in the shadow of the door sill. How much I missed her all these years. Her arms reach out from yesterday into the brightness of sunlight, covered by the knitted blue wool of her favorite old sweater. It's worn in front and at the elbows by so many hugs of grandchildren, berry-picking at Blueberry Hill, all the wipes of her hands to dry them from washing and fixing and cleaning. I join her inside her cabin. The wrinkles of her smile and a glint flashing from her eyes envelop me. I drop my gaze to the ground. I watch her tears flow and listen to her tell me, time after time, in broken English, how they took me away as a young child to be raised with the white side of the family, and how Mom cried. Then Grandma rises and leans lightly on my arm and her cane. We walk to the cemetery. She whispers prayers and pours whiskey on the grave of her youngest son. Now it is 1983. The shrewd, black-winged trickster, Raven, sacred creature chosen to speak for Creator, perches just above the cemetery and eloquently eulogizes my Grandma Sophie as she begins her final journey home to the spirit world. This is Rose Hybear, granddaughter of the late Sophie Vanderpool, Alaskan Athabascan from McGrath, Alaska.
Circles, day to night, night to day, spring to summer, fall to winter. The tides of the great oceans in and out. The tides of our breath rushing into fullness, then a moment of stillness. Rushing out clear, stillness. Those moments of stillness as we turn around, mystery, so sacred. For when our breathing stops turning around, our bodies die. It is the circle that imbues life. We are part of the circle. We are a circle. Earth woman is a circle. Father, son as well. Take this teaching with you. My dear grandfather said, Shanella, my grandson, everything you need to know about life is in our circle of sacred colors, white, blue, yellow, and black. White for the dawn light, blue for daylight, yellow for the twilight, he said, and black for the night. I'm Arlie Neskai. Hogonet till we meet again.
Wisdom of the Elders is produced in Portland, Oregon, with funding provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Lewis and Clark National Historic Trail National Park Service. Learn more about the people and music you hear on Wisdom of the Elders, purchase educational material, or make a contribution to fund programming on our website at wisdomoftheelders.org. Discover the growing network of Indigenous oral historians, storytellers, and song carriers. Visit the Turtle Island Storytellers Network at turtleislandstorytellers.net. Executive producer of Wisdom of the Elders is Rose Hybear. Consulting producers D. May Roberts and Peggy Berryhill. Co-producers Clark Salisbury and William Ward. Script editor and director Larry Johnson. Writer Anne Morin. Our theme music is by music director Nico Wind. Website assistance from Clark Salisbury, Daniel Ciazon, Kara Briggs, and Rebecca Freeman. Educational materials by Larry McClure. Production assistance by Paul Woodsong, Onisha Wells, Roby Cook, and Rose Hill. Distribution manager, Richard Fonseca. Legal advisor, Judd Carasone. Special thanks to Native American Public Telecommunications, American Indian Radio on Satellite, Native Media Resource Center, and Media Rights Productions.
We will walk.
We will walk.
We will honor.
We will honor.
Respect the wisdom of our elders.
You've been listening to Wisdom of the Elders here on KBOO Portland. Coming right up, we're going to have Hard Knock Radio for you. But first, these messages from the station.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor What the Festival, July 26th through 28th, 2013, at Wolf Run Ranch in Oregon. Featuring over 50 electronic and dance artists, including Purity Ring, A-Track, RJD2, and Tycho, as well as on-site art installations, a hookah lounge, and splash pool. That's July 26th through 28th, 2013, at Wolf Run Ranch